Hello and welcome to Heart to Heart Conversations on Dream Corner with Viv Oyolu. On today's show, I'm chatting with Inki Nweka. Inki started her career in computer science, working as a management consultant in the UK and across Europe. She's a self-confessed foodie, and she's a creative chef, she tells me, and I'm actually at her place where I'm going to taste some of her delights. Her focus is on Afrofusion, blending and mixing recipes and flavors from across different continents with her unique taste. She's also the author of Quintessentially Epic Recipe Foods of Nigeria and another book, which is soon to be published as the Modern Nigerian Cookbook. Also under the Topelo and Green brand, she consults and trains staff and provides cooking services for corporate and private clients. So a very, very warm welcome, Inki, to Dream Corner. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And thank you for having me and indeed coming to my house.
Yes, I'm looking forward to tasting some of your delights. I'd like to tell my listeners where I meet my guests. So Inki and I, okay, you probably guessed from her name that she's Nigerian, and as I am. And we have a lot of mutual friends. And she started Topelo and Green, I think it was last year. Well, it came to my notice last year on Facebook. I think that's the best way to put it. And watching and seeing how things have developed and the pictures she used to put up on Facebook really caught my eye. And then when I found out her previous career was in computer science, I said, she's definitely someone for Dream Corner. So where did the start of your career begin?
I guess when I left university, I studied computer science at university, followed by decision sciences, which is basically applied maths. When I left, I joined as a trainee management consultant with a large computer firm. And then after that, I moved to a management consultancy where I stayed for another 7 to 8 years. Well, I've got two children. When I had my second daughter, or just before I had her, I realized that probably wasn't going to be conducive for the children to have two parents who were always away from home. Because as a management consultant, one tends to travel a lot, albeit most of my travel was within Europe, but a lot of the time I'd be away for, you know, Monday to Friday. And I just couldn't see how I'd manage with two children. The firm were really good to me after my first one. They tried to give me
positions in
London, actually. But it was only so long they could sustain that for, because you have to go where the clients are. So I left, had my second, so I had a little bit of a stint as a lady of leisure, lady at lunches. So obviously very good training for what I'm now doing, because ate out a lot, met up friends. I ran, this is going to be funny because you don't know this, I ran a shoe shop for, I owned and ran a shoe shop for about 5 years. Started it from scratch, and basically I was everything, you know, from the buyer to the accountant to the sales assistant. The only thing I wasn't was a window cleaner.
So why shoes and why a shoe shop?
You know, my mum used to call me Imelda Marcus when I was younger. I just loved shoes. What I really wanted to do at the time, and I wish I had, was a deli stroke rest, a bistro, I would say. But what I had in mind was a bistro where I would cook what I felt like cooking that day, and it wouldn't be tied to one cuisine. And my partner, my friend, said, you know, we'll be the only ones coming to eat there because nobody else will understand. You know, you've got to choose one thing.
Sort of have a theme.
Yeah, have a theme. But you know, that's not really the way I, you know, I eat. So, and then this friend of mine who had a shoe shop anyway, he said, look, why don't we do something together? So I said, oh, okay, fine. You know, I'm always up for a challenge. So I said, fine. So we did it. We did that for about 5 years. Towards the end of the 5 years, it started losing its appeal for me. It was no longer challenging. You know, I'd built a business from scratch, huge learning curve, et cetera, et cetera. It became very routine and boring. So then I sold it. And then I guess I started wondering what to do next. Again, I dallied with the idea of food again. You know, the food's never been far away. I just started, I had a bit more time on my hands, I guess. I was taking pictures and just with my iPhone, you know, and putting it on Facebook. And then people started saying, oh, this is really nice. Why don't you do, even if it's just a picture book on Nigerian food, you know, you make Nigerian food look sexy. And I didn't really think much of it. And then just one day out of the blue, I thought, you know what, you know, people have nagged me for so long. So let me actually just write this book. And which is what I did. And then the food services side, or the culinary services side, came about when two things really. Somebody asked me to come to Nigeria to put together a proposal to come to Nigeria to train her staff. And then that went really well. And then in the back of my mind, I remembered something another friend told me. One of the many friends that's always coming to eat in my house. And he said to me, Inki, the thing you'd do for free is the thing you should do for a living. And, you know, I guess all these things came together to bring about the birth of Tupela and Green, really.
Yeah. I always say this because I interview lots of women. And one of the things that I've found is there's no experience that's ever wasted. Everything sort of adds up. And then where you find yourself in the end, you can see why you subconsciously made all those decisions that, you know, you're here now.
You know, I agree. Like I said, I guess my stint of lunching helped. You know, when I think about the summer jobs I had when I was at university, even through not quite secondary school, but sixth form and art college, it's all helped. I mean, another little known fact about me is I'm actually very artistic, and I was at Chelsea School of Art for 2 years. I did a foundation course there.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so I draw and I paint, I design gardens. I'm just one of those lucky people, really. I'm creative as well as technical. So, you know, even working as a shop assistant in Debenhams, which was my first job, all these things have helped me in terms of customer service, you know, stock keeping, dealing with the public, and so on and so forth. The art training helps. In my food presentation, it helps when I'm thinking of new dishes because I'm thinking about colors, I'm thinking about textures, I'm thinking about how things are going to look on the plate, as well as, you know, the taste, of course, as well as looking good. It has to taste good. Yeah. So, yeah, I do agree.
Yeah. And thinking about Tupela and Green, where does the name come from, or how did you put two of them together?
It's funny you ask that. Well, a friend of mine, Ivor, who is in that sort of branding and build, I can't think of the exact word right now, but anyhow, we went through a branding exercise where he asked me, it was almost like he interviewed me, asking me questions, you know, what colors do you like, shapes, just really, I thought, odd questions. Anyway, if you could choose, what would you prefer, art or architecture, that sort of thing. And he was writing all this stuff down, and we had a big flip chart and lots of paper. Anyway, in the end, we agreed on one thing, that green was my favorite color. So, and I said, and I knew I wanted the name to be something and something. And I wanted it to be a name that anybody, you know, an internationally friendly name. So we agreed on green for some, you know, for various reasons. One, because it's my favorite color. Two, it's the Nigerian color anyway. Three, it's about vegetables and freshness and vitality, which is what we want in food. So it ticks
many boxes.
So that was fine. And then by now it's about 3 hours. I was really exhausted, and I was thinking, oh God, I've had enough of this. But I couldn't say that, you know, he was being very kind to me. So I suddenly remember this song. I knew the title of, I think it's, I should have known you were going to ask me this, but I think it's Rob Dylan or something like that. It's called Tupelo Honey. And I really like the name Tupelo, the sound of it. So I Googled it to make sure it wasn't rude in any language.
It really matters.
In an international, if you want to go internationally, then it does matter because you don't want it to be rude in Spanish or something. So it turned out to be a town in America, the name of a town in America, but also the name of a Native American tree, which again is great because it's back to my
food.
Also my love of gardening anyway, and you know, nature. So yeah, so it worked quite well, and I like the name personally.
Yeah, it's very, very lovely name, and I think when you see pictures, so anybody who's listening now, you should just go and Google Tupelo and Green. It's tupeloandgreen.co.uk.
It's Tupelo Green.
Tupelogreen.com. Yeah. So just go and Google that now, and you'd see some of the photos of the food. I tell you, you're going to be licking your fingers. No, you're smacking your lips thinking, I want some of that. So how have you created the recipes? Because we're going to taste some of your lovely stuff later on. But how have you come up with the recipes that are sort of unique to you?
Well, I do two things. One, I cook Nigerian food in the way that most Nigerians would recognize the taste, all Nigerians would recognize the taste. So no different from your grandmother or your mother or great-grandmother. The difference is I present it in a way you would not expect. Other things I do is I do what, you know, we're calling Afrofusion. So I take some elements of Nigerian cuisine or some Nigerian ingredients, and I suppose I pull on my experience of eating through the world, luckily, because I live in London. I live in London, and but also, you know, having traveled a lot, you know, for work and for leisure, I've been quite lucky to eat, you know,
a wide range of food.
Yeah. So I pull on elements like that. So, for instance, there's one that I think intrigued everyone on Facebook, and it was stir fried noodles, nothing unusual in that. But then I used ugba, which is oil bean. And it's very particular to the people of Southeast, in fact, the Igbos of Nigeria. And what made me come up with that particular combination? Well, it's a bit of a long story. I went into a greengrocer's to pick up two or three things. And as is normal, I end up being distracted by nice things they had. And I saw these really long beans, which I'd never seen before. And they must have been about a foot long or a foot and a half long. And so I asked the shopkeeper, you know, what's this? And he said, long beans. Great name. So I bought some, and my children weren't that keen on that. All I did was steam them, and I can't remember what we ate them with. They said they were fine, but they preferred normal runner beans. So anyway, I had so much left. So I Googled them and then found out that they're from the Far East, and they have another name called stinky beans. So when I Googled stinky beans a bit more, I realized that the botanical name for stinky beans is from the same family as ugba. But that's thanks to all the research I've been doing on Nigerian food. Don't ask me to pronounce it because I don't speak Latin. So I thought, okay, so once I knew that, I then looked into how they themselves use it, which is how I came up with the stir fry, because that was actually pretty quick to do anyway, and I would know very quickly if it was going to work or not. So I did it with noodles rather than rice. And it was actually really, really delicious. Initially, it was, not bad. And I really didn't want to add soy sauce because I was trying to keep it as Nigerian as possible. But once I put some soy sauce in it, it definitely made it work. So, and then I thought, actually, that's fine because you can get soy sauce in Nigeria. Because when I'm doing these things, I always try and think of things which are readily available in Nigeria, you know, and would be readily available to quite a wide audience, you know, so they can go down to the market and pick it up. Not quite sure if I've seen soy sauce in the market, but I have seen some other things, you know, which I wouldn't expect to see in a Nigerian market. So that's not even going to the supermarket.
When you talk about combining different foods, have you surprised yourself in some of the things that you've decided to try out?
I think so. I mean, sometimes I go through phases. You know, sometimes the ideas keep coming, and then other times, and that's why I started even taking pictures, so I could remind myself, you know, of what I had done. That's probably it. And then I found I had a flair for that as well. But anyway, I mean, recently I really liked this last one I've just done. It was it's one of my favorite soups. Funny enough, in the book that Viv mentioned, Quintessentially Efik Recipes, it's a very traditional Efik food. It's called, everyone in Nigeria knows it as fisherman's soup. And it has a bit of an interesting history behind it. I'm going to digress a bit. Is that okay?
Go on, please.
It was actually developed by the fishermen, the Efik fishermen. So when they would be away from home weeks at a time, couldn't really carry much on their canoes. So they would take some, say, dried pepper, some salt, palm oil, and garri. And then they would, so their food was what they caught, supplemented by maybe things they may find in settlements across the way or from riverbanks. This soup is basically, it tends to be non-scaly fish, like catfish, such as catfish, you know, prawns, basically whatever else they catch, palm oil, onions. Oh, sorry, they took onions along. Onions, pepper, chili pepper, salt. And then you just, traditionally, they will thicken it with garri. And then some fresh herbs, which they would have found on the way.
Yeah.
It's a very, very easy soup to make. You know, you can make it in like 15, 20 minutes. I absolutely love it. So I don't know what I was thinking of one day. And I suddenly, maybe I was craving Chinese food or something. And then I was thinking, I haven't had wontons for ages. But I was I didn't know whether I wanted to have a Chinese takeaway or whether I want. And I thought, well, let me make the soup. I looked in the freezer. I didn't have any wonton wrappers. And I thought, so I have to make wontons now from scratch myself, which I did. And I decided to put in some chopped prawns and some Nigerian herbs in the wrappers, in the dumplings. I mean, essentially, that's what wontons are, Chinese dumplings. And what did I put? I put and some chili peppers and then this particular Nigerian herb, which I love. It's one of my favorites. It's called scent leaf. It's sort of a cross between basil and mint.
Really?
Yeah, it's lovely. I just love it. I think I've got some in the freezer. Okay. I'll give you some.
I don't know if I'll use it. What can I use it to cook?
No, I'm going to put some in what I'm cooking for
you.
Oh,
right. Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Yeah. So you get to taste it. But you can sniff it as well. So I put all that in. And initially I was thinking, should I fry them? And I fried one. I didn't quite like it fried. So I decided to steam it in a broth, the fisherman soup broth, or etherine is what the ethics call it. And my goodness, you know, I tried one and it was so good. Yeah, it was lovely. And I can't wait. That one, it's my most recent invention, as it were, but I just absolutely love it. And if Viv ate fish, I would have made it for her today, but she doesn't eat fish.
I do, but I wasn't quite keen on the fisherman's soup. I think that was the only thing I wasn't keen on. So she was very kind to ask me what I would eat, because, you know, I guess a chef always loves people who are happy with their food. So
absolutely.
She didn't want to cook something I wouldn't be ecstatic about. So, yeah. Thinking about, you know, putting up recipes, because one of the things you're going to be doing soon is to, write out more recipes for a larger audience to taste in a restaurant very soon. And how are you going to come up? Are you going to use some of the things you've done previously, or are you going to start creating a new batch of recipes to dazzle our taste buds with?
I think it's a bit of both. To start off with, a lot of it will be some of the ones I've done, but obviously...
How many have you done so far, actually? You don't count anymore?
No, I don't count. So they're just,
see, that's
they're...
not good.
That's part of the problem I've got at the moment, because obviously I should be working on the menu for the restaurant, and it's not just the restaurant menu. There's a bar area as well, and there's a pool area. So I have quite a few different types of recipes, and I just wish somebody would go through my pictures and just say this one, because I'm thinking, well, I don't know which one I want to do, but I think the way I'm going to get around that is to have a key menu, and then what I'll have is I'll probably have daily specials or weekly specials. But also, I mean, in England, I like to eat seasonally, and definitely in Nigeria, because this restaurant is going to be in Lagos, they're very into seasonal eating.
Oh,
anyway, yes,
really?
Yeah. So it's I think I saw it was I can't remember what season it's meant to be at the moment. I think it's pear season and corn season. So,
oh,
yeah,
course,
yeah.
Okay, in those terms.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've had to think about those sorts of things.
Yeah, so for instance, I know because it's rainy season, for instance, now, I keep seeing everyone on Nigerians on Facebook complain about the price of tomatoes. Apparently, the tomatoes are really expensive. But okra is really cheap at the moment. So, and obviously more readily available. So one will probably consider that in, you know, coming up with a restaurant menu as well. Yeah. So it's not all imported food, you know, it'll be locally sourced food.
Yeah. And just thinking about that, how are you going to physically do that? Are you going to train people to, you know, maintain the standard that you've obviously got? Because you have very high standards. Just looking at the photos on Facebook and looking at the book as well, you have very high standards, and that's something you're going to have to... Do you think that's going to be a challenge to maintain?
I think it's going to be a challenge, but it's the same as anywhere. I think it'll be the same here. It's not just, you know what I mean? It happens wherever you are, I think, you know, when you're dependent on other people. So it is finding the right staff, you know, making sure you keep them happy, you know, the good things that any business really should be doing, no matter what, whether it's a food business or any other type of business, you know, your staff are the business. So, but most importantly, what I want to do is make sure they've got the same passion for food that I do. And, you know, and we're going to have fun coming up with new recipes, because they're the ones who are going to be testing the recipes for me anyway and tasting them, you know, and who knows, they may come up with some. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be quite exciting.
Yes. And do you know, a thought just flashed through my head, you know, setting up a school where you teach people how to blend their cultural tastes with different things that you're going to introduce them to, different recipes and different types of herbs as well. Because I can imagine that, yes, there are great herbs in Nigeria, but it's just the Nigerian herbs. There are going to be other types of herbs that you will find to make the taste even more exotic. Out of all the different, I guess, when I say continents that you pick different things from, which is your favorite?
I guess it's probably the Orientals, just because, I like the way it's not always on the ingredients or the food side. Sometimes it's about the presentation as well. I just like the way they present food, and food could be quite light. But the inspiration, I think, comes from, I just don't know where it's going to come from. You know, I may be looking at something, it may not even be food, but maybe that shape reminds me of something else, or maybe sometimes a plate. It could be a plate or a bowl. And then I'll suddenly think, oh, what can I put in there? You know, what can I do with that? And I start thinking. Sometimes I draw them out. Sometimes I lie in bed and think about it. You know, it's in my head. So, I'll probably say the Far East.
One of the things I haven't mentioned, or I didn't mention in the intro, is that you create sauces that you sell. How did that come about?
You're going to think, you're going to laugh at me. Again, it was just somebody nagging me, probably.
You're quite the entrepreneur, aren't you?
I know. No, you know what it is at some point, I always seem to have lots of things going on. So, usually it's, when I'm ready to do something, I think we first mentioned it, or we thought about it about 6 years ago. I had other things I was doing at the time, so the time just was not ready. I have a partner I work with. She's Italian, so it's not just Nigerian sauces. You know, it's a combination of various things that we do. Although the chili sauce seems to be the most popular. It's amazing, actually, because, non-Nigerians and Nigerians, and even people, I think, maybe it might be too hot for them, but they like it because it's not just heat. It's got a lot of flavor to it. And you'll be trying some today as well.
Ooh, lovely. So how many do you have in the range?
At the moment, we have six. I can't remember all of them. But the plan is to add more from other parts of the world. So at the moment, we've got Italian and Nigerian, or let me say West African. But there are plans for others.
And how do people use them?
All of them are ready to eat.
Oh, okay.
So you could literally scoop them out and, eat them with crisps or, not crisps, crisp bread or breadsticks. Someone sent me a picture yesterday, for instance, on Facebook. She had grilled some salmon and she put it on a salmon.
I saw that.
And that looked really nice with asparagus.
Yes.
Yeah, made me want some asparagus, actually. So other people, you can toss them in, just boil some pasta, toss them in, toss the pasta in the sauce. You can use it to make jollof rice, the very famous West African rice. You can eat it with bread.
And maybe carrots.
Cucumber.
Yeah, and all that
any of that stuff. Someone put it on a hot dog. It was very nice on a hot dog. There's an aubergine one we made that's really lovely. And that went really well with some chili sauce on a hot dog. That was actually very nice. It was an inspired combination.
Yeah. And how can people find this? Because we're just talking about it now. And I can imagine people are like, I think I'd love some of that.
The three most popular ones are on the website at the moment. I do need to get round to putting the other ones on, but on the website, which is tupelogreen.com.
And have you found that people outside of Nigerians and West Africans have found you and found what you're doing interesting?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I mean, we did a food festival a few months ago in Welling Garden City, which is obviously not that cosmopolitan, but even though it was called the World Food Festival, and we had a really good reaction, to the sauces. How did we know? We took X number of toothpicks for them to dip the bread in. And I think we counted, I think almost 350 toothpicks, estimated had gone, and it wasn't that busy, the festival, so that was quite good. We definitely had very good feedback there. And again, we need to, do a few more festivals. Probably that will be next year, next summer we'll look into doing more. And then on the book side, it's been amazing. The books have gone so far, considering it's only recently published. They've been around the world, Australia, Norway, Canada, and you know, Nigerians and non-Nigerians. You know, there's an Australian guy in the outback somewhere. I'm still not sure how he's going to find the ingredients, but
he's adamant. Your pictures have obviously inspired
him. Yeah, he's adamant it will, and I've asked him to take photos where he does. I'm looking forward to seeing what he cooks.
So, how has it been for you trying to balance work life? Because this is a full-time business, isn't it? Mm. I mean, writing the book, because you have other series in mind, aren't you? Tell us a bit about that before I ask my other question.
The series is called Foods of Nigeria. So the intention is to cover then the whole of Nigeria, which obviously is a big task, which is why it was...
You're taking up a lot.
Yes, I am. It'll probably take a couple of years, you know, 2-3 years to finish them. But they're all going to be called quintessentially something. So it's the essence of that particular part of Nigeria I'll be dealing with. So things people will be familiar with, but also things which people would have forgotten about because they're dishes that people don't really cook anymore, not for any particular reason, but maybe they've forgotten about it or they may think, oh, it's time consuming. Yeah, some of them do take a while, but you know, they're modern tools one can use. For instance, a pressure cooker will speed up beans, you know, and the one I'm working on now is quintessentially Southeast, which covers the part of Nigeria where I'm from. It's mostly Igbo food. And, you know, it's just amazing that people don't know. We have maybe about 4 or 5 different types of beans. They're used in slightly different ways. So even for me, I'm really enjoying doing this series because it's a discovery of, you know, my country and, you know, not just the ethnic group I come from, but even that, you know, I'm learning new things myself. The books look a little bit at the culture of, you know, the people. So yeah, I'm loving it, and I'm hoping that other people will too. So that's the intention: go around Nigeria, and you know, as with the first one, actually go and spend time in that region. You know, meet the locals. You know, speak with them. You know, pick up some recipes, take photographs, and basically have fun, which I always do when I'm writing.
Well, you're going to be cooking as well, so that's the more fun than the actual writing, I would imagine.
No, that's a bit I like the best, actually. In fact, I think maybe when I'm rich and famous, I'll get someone to follow me around with a tape recorder like yours, and they can type up the recipes after.
But I think doing that, you're going to bring a different generation to some of the things that are lost in, because as Nigeria grows and becomes a lot more westernized, some of the things that we used to do as children, children's children are not going to do that. They would have, I think it wouldn't have passed down the generations the way it was passed down before. So you're modernizing things, but actually getting people back to their roots. So I think that's a great, and food is, as food in any culture is one thing that brings everybody together. So I guess this would be a great thing for people to talk about.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, one of the first people that bought the quintessentially Efik recipes was actually an Efik Facebook friend. I've never met him. And it was one of the first books I sent out. And I wasn't, you know, it was the first time I'd used that courier. So I wrote him to say...
Were you nervous?
Yeah, I was definitely. Definitely I was. Now I'm not nervous anymore, but I really was the first few. And so I wrote him to see if he'd got them. I waited all day, waited. And at 8 o'clock, I couldn't bear it anymore, 8 p.m. So I sent him a message and I said, have you got it? He said, oh, yeah, I've just got it. I'm just going through it with my daughters. We're looking at it. And he said, you've made me realize actually how much I've shortchanged them, because there are so many things in here I've never told them about or cooked for them. And so I reminded him of dishes of his childhood, which is, you know, it's part of the things I want to do. And so I was really happy when I get that kind of feedback. You know, I had another lovely one recently, because the other thing we haven't mentioned is sometimes I do private catering for people, I cook for people, and somebody had ordered some chicken stew. And he sent me, honestly, I need to frame that text. It was so lovely. And he said, that stew was delicious. It was nostalgia on a plate. Oh. It took me back to a Sunday afternoon in my boyhood when stews were rich and Nigeria was different. It was so lovely.
Oh.
Yeah, that sort of...
There was a lump in my throat.
I know. It was just so, it was so lovely. I've saved it. It was such a nice thing, you know, to say. So, you know, that's what food does. It brings people together. Reminds people, you know, of either occasions. There are always memories associated with food. You know, for instance, I had a lovely Maybe I'm a little bit boring. All I ever do is talk about food. And I was with a group
People love food, so yeah. I don't see why that could be boring. Please go ahead.
So, last year I was in Abuja, which is the capital of Nigeria, and I was sitting with some northern friends, some northern male friends, because one of them had been telling me about some yogurt based drinks they had, but he couldn't remember half the names. So I asked these guys, I said, he told me about this one and he told me about that one. And it was really quite funny watching them. These were guys who had just been, they all happened to be male. I think I was the only female there. They'd been arguing almost not, let me not say violently, but furiously about, about politics, maybe 10 minutes before that. And then once I started asking them questions, okay, they carried on arguing, but it was a different kind of argument. It was, no, mine is better. Nope, you don't know what you're talking about. There's this other one, and I was taking down notes, and each time I would say, okay, so how do you make it? And then there'll be a pause, and it'll be, I don't know, but it's really nice. Okay, can you just spell the name for me then? So it was really quite funny, and one of them introduced me to his wife, and she taught me a couple, but again, it's a place I need to go back to and, get a few more recipes and learn a few more dishes. But there's some really amazing foods from the north of Nigeria, which a lot of Nigerians don't know.
Yes, and I think we don't know how some of these foods blend together, and they could be mixed together and presented in a way that not only unifies our taste buds, but unifies something that's going on at the moment. It seems to be this north and south divide thing. And, if only we knew how similar we were, and it would be such a great thing.
Oh, no, I agree. I've been asked that before as well. Do I think that football could unify Nigeria? And I think so. Food. I don't know why I suddenly said football, because I think my answer then was food and football were the one thing I thought could. For instance, jollof rice, all Nigerians think is a Nigerian food. And I think almost every Nigerian, doesn't matter what part of Nigeria they're from, love it. Egusi soup's another one. I would say pepper soup. Nkwobi, which is Igbo, but it seems to have grown
widely
acceptable. There are a few, moi moi, of course, there are a few like that. But also the thing I've found in the books I've been writing is the similarities. So I happened to, be talking to an Efik cook about some of the things I was going to be doing for the next book, The Southeast. And he said, oh, we have that, but we do it this way. So there's a slight difference. One of the really interesting, and this is going to cause controversy at some point, but one of the interesting things I found out when I was doing the Efik recipes was one of the most famous soups, Afang soup, is actually Igbo, not Efik. Now, I was told this by, in doing my research for the book, I was introduced to two ladies who are well-known custodians of the Efik culture. And they said to me, it's Igbo food. I said, surely not. They said, yes, it is. It's actually Okazi soup, but we've taken it and made it ours.
In a different way,
which I'll explain in a minute. Then when I went to meet the Obong, because he was one that introduced me to the ladies, I said, oh, I had a really great meeting. And look, they told me this. He goes, yeah, it's your soup. We took it. So when I thought about it logically, carefully, I should say, after I got over that shock, I was a bit worried about putting it in the book, because I thought, do you know what? They told me, I haven't made this up. But the big difference is the Efiks tend not to use a lot of water in cooking. So when they boil their meat, for instance, there'll be very, very little water. And then they make sure most of the water is evaporated before they put the vegetables. The source of their soups is basically palm oil. So their soups tend to be palm oil rich. And also I find that the use of water leaf, which is the basis for those two, it is also helps thicken the soup. And then if we take Afang, for instance, it's very oil rich, very vegetable rich, very dense. Okazi soup, with Igbos, we tend to have more liquid to start with. And then we use a thickener. So whether it's yam or cocoyam or, one of the seed powders, that is the main difference. But the vegetables essentially the same,
Actually, so the question I was going to ask you before, our food is very oil rich. Is that best way to put it?
Yeah.
So how do you get over that when people are thinking or when people are being health conscious?
I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that palm oil is bad for you. It's actually very good for you.
In moderation, I would
say. Everything in moderation. If you drank enough water, you'd kill yourself. That's true. You drown yourself from inside out. But palm oil is actually up there as a good oil with coconut oil, olive oil. You know, in fact, what's worse for you is things like, you know, blended vegetable oils. So I have no fear of palm oil. Some people do. Obviously, it is a fat. So yeah, I would say moderation, but I don't see why as a special treat. I mean, one of my favorite things is I love boiled yam, and I just heat up some palm oil, fry some onions in it, some crayfish, and some chili, and that's it. You know, it's basically yam and oil. Mm-hmm. And that's even taking it a step further. Some people just eat it with plain oil, mm-hmm. you know, and it's so nice. It's really delicious.
Okay, we've talked about enough food.
Sorry, I'm making myself hungry now.
Yeah, I think we deserve a treat. So, yes, we'll pick up this interview while we're tasting some of Inki's
okay,
stuff.
All right. Okay.
So I'm back with Inki Iweka, and she's just fed me some totally delicious soul food. That's the only way I can describe it. So what did you feed me with? So let's tell everybody and make their mouths water.
Well, we started off with some little canapés, which are based around moi moi. Moi moi is, well, the best way to describe them are steamed bean cakes made from black-eyed beans with some chilies, red bell peppers, a little bit of tomato, and some salt and some oil. And I topped it off with chopped prawns and spring onions. Those were briefly stir-fried in with some ginger and garlic and a little bit more chili. We like our chili with Nigerians.
So it packed some heat. That
I did. So that's what we started off with. And then we had some palm oil. Jollof is probably the best way to call it. Some people call it native jollof, but other people think that's a rather on-PC name.
What is that?
I didn't want to be called native, I suppose. Okay. It is, palm oil, or local jollof is another name for it. The Efiks call theirs Iwuke Edesi, Edesi bean rice. The Igbos call their version, Osikapa jollof. So anyway, it's basically rice. I use long grain, but you can use locally grown rice in Nigeria. What else has got in it? Palm oil, which I've already mentioned. Crayfish, a lot of smoked fish, stockfish, some chilies, and then, some vegetables, green vegetables, leafy green vegetables. So I used two, ugu, also known as fluted pumpkin, and then efring, which is the easiest one to pronounce. It's also called nchao. The English name is scent leaf, and scent leaf is, if you imagine, a cross between basil and mint, but going towards the minty side.
It's delicious, I have to say. I smelt it, and then I tasted it in the food. It made the chili pop a bit more, which was beautiful. Yeah. Just really lovely.
It's actually one of my favorite Nigerian herbs. Mm. Sometimes I add another one called uziza, but I didn't have any. And that's the local, the common name for that one is hot leaf, because again, that's got a peppery taste. And that one, I haven't figured out how I can describe it, but the smell is just amazing. And was it really?
Yeah. Oh, well, we had some lamb.
We had some lamb chops. Sorry. Yeah. And then we had some morgul, but stir fried with some flaked stockfish and onions.
Yeah. But all of it, I have to tell you people, I am stuffed. We had to take a break after eating before we continued this. So how easy is it to find the different leaves that you've described?
If you live in London, it's pretty easy. I mean, I live in Northwest London. I have several shops that I use. One Yemi in Housden. Burnt Oak is another good place. Shepherd's Bush, Goldhawk Road. South London is much easier. Peckham, Dalston, which I know is not in South London, but there are quite a few. I think Brixton as well is meant to be good to find them. There's a big Nigerian cash and carry, which I haven't used, but a lot of people tell me it's very good in South London, called Ade's Cash and Carry, so Ade, A-D-E. There's also an online shop, and she's a lovely girl, or lovely young woman, I should say. That's called ejshop.com, I-J-E, shop. .com, so one word. She has a great variety of Nigerian food, which one can buy online. Some of the major supermarkets for instance, I've certainly seen things like palm oil and Gary, you know, some Nigerian ingredients I've seen in Sainsbury's, Morrison's,
and Tesco's,
yeah. Mm. They don't do the fresh leaves. Those you'd have to go to Nigerian store. And also they tend to come, the best time to buy them is Wednesdays, because they arrive from Nigeria Wednesdays and sometimes Thursdays. So that's the best time to get the freshest leaves. Some of them you can freeze, you can wash and freeze anyway. With some of the leaves, for instance, in the book, I have given substitutes. So if I didn't have the ugu, the pumpkin leaf, I would have used kale, and I would have used a little bit of spinach, but more of the kale. And if I didn't have the scent leaf, I would have used normal basil or holy basil, you know, the Thai basil. So they're, you know, ways of getting around it. But staples are easy to get anyway, I think, and they can be bought mail order, as I mentioned.
Yeah. And even people who are listening to this outside of the UK or even Nigeria, they would still be able to find stuff online or in shops in the area.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I've spoken with people in America, Canada, even Australia. I'm not quite sure exactly where in Australia. I think it was Sydney she lives in. And apparently there are African shops there. But interestingly enough, some of the things that we use, other countries use them. So I've got a Facebook friend. I think she's in, I think it's Burma, I think. And they have palm oil there. So she's Australian. And she's asked me for a couple of recipes, and she's going to, as soon as she gets the palm oil, she'll make, try that, because everything else, one particular dish she wants, she can get, you know, everything else. With crayfish, for instance, when I've had to make, I remember I was up in Belfast, and I decided to make Nigerian beans for a friend, and I don't know the place, and I didn't know where to buy that particular crayfish from. So I used Chinese shrimp paste. Because it works.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
So they are, you know, sorry, I just mentioned the book one more time. They are, where they're substitutes, I indicate, you know, what people could buy, and things which are more readily available. You know, Indian stores are good for things like yams, cassava. I've made quite a typical ethic dish. I set a challenge to myself, and I said, I'm going to make it using just ingredients from a supermarket. And I did that. It's,
really?
Yeah, it's not 100% authentic, but I did. So rather than use cocoyam leaves, I use, Savoy cabbage. Yeah, and it works, you know, because by the time you put lots of crayfish in it and palm oil, you know, it did work. I mean, it was slightly different. My tester, who you just met, Sam, my chief tester, he said, it's not bad, you know, but he said, but you can tell it's not quite authentic. But he still cleared his plate, so. Maybe he was just hungry, who knows.
Oh dear. One of the things you're going to set up these restaurants back home, and you know, the way I see it, it's going to do very well because of your cooking style and your presentation. The presentation, I think, is so much more important than just laying stuff out. Because if you want food to be accepted by everyone, and especially when it's food that people are not used to or haven't tried before, you know, appearance is everything for them.
I agree. We will be focusing, obviously not just on the appearance of the food, but the, you know, the taste, the flavour. For me, a good plate is about balance, you know, so nothing is overloaded. The plate should complement the food and vice versa. There should be a variety of textures, colors. You know, most of my plates tend to be quite, when I say plates, plates of food, not the plate itself. My plates tend to be quite plain, but the food is colorful and vibrant. And I try and make the ingredients sing, as it were, you know, so each one is.
Oh, my stomach is rejoicing. So, you know, if I'm anything to go by, anyone to go by.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad. So that's the, you know, the sort of ethos. So we'll be doing some, typical Nigerian food, but there will also be some Afro fusion and what Nigerians call continental food, which is foreign food, anything that's not Nigerian, basically. So a bit of the three, but hopefully all complementing one another.
So as we round up, what do you know now that you wish you knew at the very start? And we can go back to the very start of your career or wherever you want, really. Would you have done anything differently?
I think the only thing I'd have done differently is when I wanted to do the deli / bistro, I'd have done it then. I think that's what I would have done it then. Just because I was that much younger, I probably had a bit more energy. But mind you, the way I think about food now is not the way I thought about food then. So it's difficult, you know, because it's a journey. And probably this is the right time for me. What do I wish I know now? Oh, it's difficult. Or I knew then, rather. I guess I wish I knew that I would end up doing this.
Yeah. Who would want to know what's ahead
of them? I think I would, because one of the best birthday presents I ever had was a two-day fish preparation and cookery course at Raymond Blanc. And it was just, it was amazing. I would say 2 days or 3 days, can't remember. And it was just amazing. You know, I learned a lot. I really, really enjoyed it. And when I came home, I thought about doing a 1 year's catering course with Prulith. I thought about doing that. But then I thought, see, at the time, I wasn't really down this journey. And I thought to myself, yeah, it's a long time. And then what am I going to do with it afterwards? So sometimes I wish maybe I should have done that course then.
Well, maybe your palate would have been different.
Yeah, that's the
way you think about food. And African food would have been different. Yeah. But then again, I guess you'd have had more to bring to it. You just really can't tell.
You can't tell. But, I'm not saying it's been easy. There's no other way to say it. It's been a journey. Some of it enjoyable. Some of it, of course, stressful. Some of it...
That's the life of an entrepreneur.
That is life. So
normal.
No, I probably wouldn't change anything. Yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for anyone who's thinking of starting their own business?
I think the same advice that my friend OJ gave me, which, you know, I replay that so many times in my head, you know, at least once a week. You know, what you would do for free is what you should do for a living.
Well, on that note, I think we can wrap it up.
Thank you very much, Viv. And it was such a lovely afternoon too.
Yes, it's been wonderful. If you've kept us company on Dream Corner, thank you very much for your time. And I hope you've enjoyed me on the road this time. More interviews later. Take care then. Bye-bye.